And we're live. G'day, g'day. How the 186 of the Average Man podcast. Davo is sitting out in the car. I just couldn't sort of find it in myself to displace the wife and kids this afternoon. We've been out all morning and it's a bit of a cold, chilly, overcasty sort of day. There's not really much that they want to be doing outside the Savo, so I thought I won't kick them out of the van and sit in there feeling guilty about it. I'll nestle up in the car because it's not too hot, so I can sit in the car with the windows just cracked a little bit without having it running, and hopefully I won't start cooking while I'm in here, and hopefully the acoustics aren't too bad either. Not going to know until I listen to it back, but I reckon we should be okay. It's a little uncomfortable. I've got the laptop on my lap, which is, I suppose, where it's supposed to go, frying my nuts, no doubt. And I'm holding the microphone with my hand instead of using a microphone stand because there's nothing to clamp my microphone stand on to in here. But I reckon we'll be all right, mate. You just got to get the damn thing done sometimes, you know what I mean? So here we are, still in Albany. Got another week here or so. You may hear cars driving past every now and then. Some old codge just cruised past in an old F-150 towing an old Coromel caravan behind me, but it's a pretty quiet street. We should be all right. Speaking of caravans, I've been working on a few little caravan / car drama issue-y things we've had going on since we've been here in Albany. So the last stop we had before we got here at Parry's Beach, setting up the caravan, I had some pretty major, not major, I had some dramas with the setup. So one of my stabilizer legs is shit itself, and the jockey wheel is on the way out. It was going to shit itself. It was struggling. I was a bit uncomfortable with the, you know, using it and having that jacked up really high as it could go, like 800 mil up the front drawbars, like 800 mil up off the floor because of the lay of the land where the caravan was. And I had to put a jack underneath the stabilizer leg, and it wasn't ideal. So I've been sorting through those issues since we got here. And what's happened is, I mean, you could put a decent chunk of it down to user error. I'm not happy with the product I got, the jockey wheel. It was the Arc 750, which is, so it's like a jockey wheel. It's got the wheel on the bottom, which I actually don't need because I'm not wheeling this bloody van around by hand anywhere. But it's got like an adjustable body on it, so it swivels up into place when you're not using it, and then it swivels down when you want to use it, so you don't have to pull it off and pack it and store it somewhere, which is one of the main reasons I liked it. You know, there's less things to store in your toolboxes. And it's got an adjustable body on it that goes up. I think it's got about 250 mil of height adjustment in the body. It's like it's got a sleeve, it slides up in and down in. And with these placement pins, and then you've got your wine handle that cranks the actual inside shaft down to get yourself up to height as well. So it's got a couple of different adjustments there. And when it works well, it works really well. But the issue that I've had is sometimes, I'm trying to think of the main issue that I've had with it. It's like your drawbar is too close to the floor to swivel the thing down in the lowest position and then wind up. To swivel it down, not in the lowest position, and wind up from there. So you have to set it in the lowest position on the adjustment on the sleeve and then swivel it down and then wind it. But then when you get the full crank, having that on the lowest adjustment, it's not high enough to level the van out. So you've got to take the weight of the van, the drawbar, for a period of time while you then wind the wheel up, slide the body down to its longest position, and then rewind up again. And that's happened to me while I was on the road a couple of times. I didn't have anything on hand to jack up that high, like my normal jack wouldn't jack that high, like 800 mil. So I ended up having to use the two front stabilizer legs to take the weight of the van and then adjust the jockey wheel and drop it back down, which is a big no-no, and I knew that, but I had to get the van set up. So I did it, and one of my stabilizer legs has shit itself. And because this has already happened to me like three times, I figure it's a problem I'm going to come across. So I had to come up with a new solution for the jockey wheel. I looked at a bunch of different options, different jockey wheels. I just wanted one with a solid foot plate on it. And I actually ended up going with the same product, even though this one failed. I do think that sitting up in the weather in Headland for a while put some wear and tear on the mechanisms of it. And I think I might have cranked it up to full height when it was on uneven ground at one point in time, and it kind of buckled the leg a little bit. And then it's never really worked well since then. The adjustment of that body that I told you it slides up and down, that's been jammed since we got to Perth pretty much. So I've been playing around with that, trying to fix that. Had it working again at one point and it's jammed up again. So look, there's a few things that went wrong with that jockey wheel, but it's got a really good review rate from customers, and when it was working well, it was working great. So I think that perhaps I just need to be a little gentler on it and be more careful how I set it up. There's also a solid foot plate you can get for it as an aftermarket thing that pops in the bottom, so you're not relying on that wheel, because they kind of sometimes when you take the weight of the van, the wheel will roll a little bit to the lowest point of ground in like 100 mil radius, and that kind of puts some odd pressure on the foot itself. And yeah, so there's a learning curve for me. I definitely need to carry some blocks of wood so I can jack it up at least. I can, block at least 100 mil up underneath the jockey wheel when needed, so I don't have to go to full extension on it. Just lubing the parts up a bit better. I'm not sitting in the Port Hedland dust and sun now, so it's going to get a bit of better treatment. And one of the main game changes I got for this system, which I didn't have, was a high lift jack. Those upright jacks, you crank it, and it's got the little foot that comes out the side, which really is only going to be used to me for what I want to do with the drawbar. I've probably got a lifting point on the front bull bar of my car, but I wouldn't be able to jack it up to change a tyre anywhere else. But it pops underneath the drawbar and can go up or down to take the weight of the van if I need to do the old jockey wheel adjustment. So I'm not going to get caught out using the stabilizers again. So that was a bit of a learning curve, an expensive one for me, but I got that system all sorted and ready to roll again now, except the stabilizer leg, which I've located and just need to purchase and swap over tomorrow. So yeah, a few little adjustments on the van there. I've learned a little bit of, I've had a look after it a bit better as well. So there's going to be some learning experiences while on the road living in the damn caravan, and some are going to be more expensive than others, I suppose. I didn't like the trailer mate, which was the other main option a lot of fans use. It kind of works like a high lift jack. It's got the whole hydraulic lift on the side of it. But I don't like the way they pack up. It's that old style, like the little clamp that goes around your jockey wheel that you twist the bolt in and it clamps it on, and then when you don't want to use it, you untwist the little clamp thing and you take the whole jockey wheel off and store it somewhere. And I'm not about that. I don't want to be taking the jockey wheel on and off and storing it somewhere. That was sort of a bit of a no-no for me. So I've run with this system, and hopefully I can treat it better and make it last from here on in. What else we're doing? We've been juggling a few stored items. I put some little rails up on the roof of the caravan where I had a bit of extra space, and put my swags up there so they're no longer on the roof rack of the car. And we bought some three different suitcases to store homeschooling gear and some art and craft supplies that were just in shitty bags that were taking up too much room in the canopy. And also I've rearranged all my winter/work gear as well. So we've been doing a bit of jigging of the system while we're here, trying to create more space because the canopy's been sort of quite full of bits and pieces, and we really want to keep that as a usable space on the one side of the canopy. So just getting through that sort of stuff, man, and this is all what it's about, travelling, adjusting on the road. By the time we get to the end of it, we'll be bloody pros, mate. Put up a little clothesline on the front awning on the caravan as well, on the awning on the caravan. So it's just a bit of steel wire cable that goes from one side to the other just underneath the roller, the length of the awning, which is about, 4 metres, something like that. Three metres, something like that. And so, yeah, I've got a little clothesline there. We've got our little setup one, but now I've got one where we can just hang towels and a few random objects as needed. So, yeah, adjusting the system a little bit, man, which has been good. Bought a secondary mesh mat to go down outside the caravan so I can have one going all the way up to the front near my toolbox and one going all the way down to the back near my chin-up bar. So when we're in those sandy, dirty locations, we can really minimise how much dirt we get coming into our living area. I think the only other item I want to purchase at the moment is just one of those little sunscreens, like it's a little shade cloth, a little 2x2 metre shade cloth that you can attach to your awning and then peg into the ground so you can give yourself a windbreak and a bit of privacy on one side of your awning when it's out. But yeah, man, the other two issues were the remap issue, which I think I spoke about in the last episode, where when towing the caravan at a certain point in time, for some reason, it's throwing up an error code, and then like I've got no power, I can't drive it. Like it drops out of gear and it won't pop back into gear at all. I've got to pull over, turn the car off, turn it back on, and I'm good to go. It's happened to me damn near a dozen times since I left Perth, and it never happened before the remap. So I've been speaking to those guys, trying to nail down as much information as I can about what revs I'm at when it happens, what part of the throttle I'm at when it happens, and then they'll see if they can get somebody to tweak the computer mapping for me down here in Albany so I can get rid of that issue, because it's not cool towing and then all of a sudden you just got to pull over on the side of the road. There's times where that is not a good option, going up a big hill or no shoulder to pull over onto on a dodgy road. So it's something that needs to get sorted ASAP, which has been a bit shit. And also some navigation issues as well with the new stereo that I got put in. When I plug it in, I use the Apple CarPlay, my navigation wigs out. Like it has my icon like on streets over from where I am. Sometimes I'm driving through the ocean or big lakes or rivers and just in random neighborhoods. And then because it doesn't know where I am, the map like reroutes and adjusts to where I am. And it's giving me like a dodgy route because it's telling me to come from two streets over when I'm actually on the street I'm supposed to be on. And so I've got to pull it out and disconnect from the stereo, and I can't listen to music when I'm using my navigation. It seems to be good on the highways, just like a long, big, straight road, but around a town with a bunch of different, turns and streets and shit, it's not loving life, man. It's bloody frustrating, because I'm not in Perth. They guys would fix it for me if I was still in Perth, but I'm not there to get these issues sorted. So I suppose I should have done these things earlier on in the piece while we were in Perth, so I could have figured out those issues while we were still there. So, just another rookie mistake by the average man, dealing with it as we travel, man. And with the navigation, like Albany's not an easy place to get around either. It's very random. It's very random, there's so many different ways to get to the same place, and then there's also ways that you think will get you to the same place but it just turns into dead ends, or it pulls you into an estate where they're all no-through roads. So that's been frustrating. The jury's kind of out on Albany. We've got another week here. We've spoke to a lady at the Arts Centre today, gave us some good ideas for things to do with the kids this week, to get out and about. We're going to try our luck fishing again. We're going to go to the whaling station. We're going to go to the Anzac War Memorial and find Emma's granddad on there. There's a couple of trail walks we'd like to tackle, at least tackle one of those while we're here. And I think there's a few things we're going to do this week. So I don't know. The jury's kind of out. I've been a bit frustrated with the navigation driving around. That's been pissing me off. And everything's so spread out. So you're doing a lot of travel going from point A to point B. When you're doing like what I've been doing is going to different shops to pick up supplies to do these little jobs that I've got on the go. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. It's like, it's a cute town, very pretty, looking over the water there and stuff, very hilly. Seems like a very religious town. I know it's a city, but I'm calling it a town. It feels like a town. People here act like it's a, like a small town. We'll get to that. A lot of churches and a lot of Gothics. So I don't know what you make of that, but there's definitely more Gothics than I've seen since I was a teenager. I've seen in this town this week, and churches everywhere, and just like organisations that are run by the church. And there's crosses out in front of the old people's home and all sorts of stuff. So very religious little town, lots of Goths, lots of cranky, scared old people wearing masks and shit. Just like a large population that's just ready to die here. Certainly, as I said, feels like a lot of people here think they're in a small town. It feels like all the neighbours here are watching us. They're probably looking at me in the front of my, out the front in my car right now, judging me, sending messages to the people whose house we're house sitting, saying that, that there's something fucking weird about us. We had people just looking at us, giving us the weird look. And like, I'm out there chatting to them and, you know, smoothing things over and that. But like the lady next door came up to my wife the other day and just said, oh, just like the second day we were here, right? We'd been here a day and a half. We'd been out once without taking the dog and left her in the backyard. She comes up and she said, just so you know, there's like people talking on the Facebook pages saying that like there's a dog around this area that's been like left in the backyard and it's howling. It sounds like it's in pain and it's just been barking nonstop. And like, they've kind of narrowed it down to this house because they know that there's new people, like people from out of town staying here. So I just thought I'd let you know, it's not me. I don't have a problem with it. I'm whispering because I don't know if she can hear me. I don't have a problem with it, but I don't know. Like, I just thought you guys should know, like that's what people have been saying. And I just hate for someone to like hurt your dog or something. And Ems tells me this when I get back. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, we've been here a day and we were gone for 2 hours and our dog, yeah, she barks like a normal dog at things at times, but she's not like a dog that just barks all day long or just howls all day long or is a disturbance to the neighborhood. And it was like we'd been out that day with her. So I'm like, how much disruption has this dog made in 2 hours? And the whole neighborhood knows where it is and they've like used some sophisticated fucking advanced triangulation via Facebook to narrow it down to this address. I'm like, what the fuck? This lady's talking out her ass, man. She's just heard the dog bark and thought she'd come over and whinge about it and scapegoat Facebook community as a way to like make out like she's not a Karen. That's what's going on here. So, and we can hear our dog like somewhere in the neighborhood howling for fucking long periods of time, long periods at a time every day. And I'm like, that's the dog. If there's a dog around here you're whinging about, it's that random dog over there that sounds like it's been hit by a car. Fucking howling. Not our fucking dog. She's been with us. So there's that kind of shit going on here. There's like, she said it was on the Moan and Groan Facebook page. So Emma's joined the Moan and Groan Facebook page to like try and scope it out and see if there's anyone complaining about us, which there's not. But those pages in general was like, what the fuck kind of, like who, and I'm sorry if you join the Moan and Groan page in your area, but maybe you should consider reconsidering, because who the fuck joins a Moan and Groan page just to go on Facebook and whinge about inconsequential things that are happening in your fucking neighborhood? It's like, the just fucking get a life. Don't do that. Don't join a page specifically for moaning about things that annoy you in your town. Like, fucking hell, man. That's a weird thing to entertain. A Moan and Groan page. Fucking losers. So, I don't know, it's a strange place. There's lots of 40-year-old men on like e-skaties and e-scooters and e-bikes and shit cruising around. And I kind of feel that like if you're a 40-year-old man on an e-bike, you're an alcoholic. You're probably an alcoholic, bro. That's probably what's going on, right? Like, you lost your license, and instead of trying to get an E-class like we used to, you just ride an electric fucking scooter or skateboard or bike to work. And that's kind of your plan of travel, of getting around the place for the next fucking 18 months to 2 years or whatever your ban is for. That's what I think when I see these dudes anyway. Maybe I'm off on that one. I understand some dudes just enjoy the electric scooter, electric skateboard especially. I get it. I get it. They're a bit of fun. And you can tell the type. If a dude's like a younger sort of dude or like a surfy looking dude or just a guy you can tell that gets out and likes cruising around, there's a vibe you get off when you see someone like that. When you just see like a full 40-year-old dude with a like beard and a pot belly and shit cruising along, I see him in work clothes cruising around. I'm like, yeah, that dude's probably an alcoholic. That's what's going on there. You know, that's just the vibe you get off people. And some of the dudes around here have a bad vibe too. I'm going to say it. They have this, they live in a city, yet they have a very obvious disdain for outsiders as if they're from some small country town. You're not. You're from a city. You like to think you're from a little country town, but you're not. We met a fella today who goes, yeah, I've been here for 25 years, but I'm not a local yet. They're very much like that here. And I was like, yeah, I kind of thought that they were. And I think people that have an opinion that you're not a local when you've been somewhere for 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years, I kind of think those people are cunts. That's what I think. I wouldn't want to live in a town where that's the general consensus. I would never live in Broome. Sorry to my friends up in Broome. Love you guys. I've visited your town many times. It's good for a little weekender. I would never live there. And the people who live up there, same thing. They think you're not a local. You haven't been here fucking 30 years. You haven't got a business in town. That's a fuck off, man. I hate that shit. If you move somewhere and you want to be there, you give it a crack, you're there for a couple of years and you're integrating yourself into the community, you're a fucking local. Fuck off. That's one thing Headland never did to people. If you lived in Headland, you survived a couple of summers, you're a local, you're one of us. You're in the niche, mate. You're all good. I'm not going to fucking ostracize you because you fucking haven't been stuck in this fucking one-way town for fucking 20 years. Fuck off. So I don't know, man. I haven't made up my mind yet. I'll let you know next week. And when we spent another week here and got out about a little bit more, you know. But it's good to be here. It's good to have the place to pull up the caravan, some water and power, and we're avoiding the caravan parks and everything while it's hectic during the school holidays. So no complaints. Just giving you a bit of an evaluation of my opinion of the city, not a town, city, since we've been here. Seems to be a lot of black fellas here too. I'm not sure if there's a strong culture or connection to country down here. I don't know. I'm not saying that there's not. I'm saying I don't know. There seems to be plenty of lip service to traditional owners, et cetera, Aboriginal names for places, and you do see a lot sort of built into the facade of the community about the Indigenous population down here. But I don't know much about the culture. I don't know. Again, I don't know if they are connected to country or what the culture is down here. I'm not sure. But there's definitely plenty of black fellas around. Certainly more than I just would have thought of when I'd thought of Albany. I just didn't think there was a big Aboriginal community down here. But there seems like there is. Seems like there is. So that's good. I hope they do have a good connection to culture down here, you know. You know, obviously the Noongar people up in Perth have sort of don't, I suppose, is the best, easiest, most straightforward way to say that. So I'm hoping the people down here manage to keep that connection to country and that culture alive, you know. On a side note, what is on the inside of a plastic sandwich bag? You know what I mean? Where was it made? Why do we trust them? Stay with me here. I know it's a hard left, but stay with me. Would you just put your sandwich down on a random plastic surface and then pick it up and eat it? Like, I know some of you would, but I know a lot of you wouldn't. But we trust the inside of a random plastic bag to just rub itself all over our food. It's not sterilized. What the fuck's actually in there? We don't even know. We have no idea, but because it's the inside of a plastic sandwich bag, we just tell ourselves it's all good and you will fucking eat anything that comes out of the inside of that fucking happily. Lick your fingers clean of all the crumbs and juices because it was in a plastic bag. It's clean. But I wouldn't pick it up just off a random fucking concrete retaining wall and eat it because it could have some fucking dirt on it. Very strange. Very strange compartmentalization we've managed to do with ourselves there. You know something else that pisses me off? Not Not that sandwich bags piss me off, but I just couldn't think of a better segue off the top of my head. But something that pisses me off is those little mics that people hold when they're talking on Instagram. Do you know the ones I mean? Like they're usually doing ads. It's this tiny little mic and you see them holding it with like pinched fingers and talking into it. So they're talking, they're kind of pinching their fingers together near their mouth and that's a microphone they're talking into. It's like, it looks stupid. You got to find a better solution. Do better. Wear a lapel mic or just project your voice, but don't do that. Those things are shit. It looks weird. It looks stupid. It annoys me. It's distracting. And speaking of Instagram ads, Australians do the worst, cringiest Instagram ads ever. And I know, like, I know the Aussies without even having the volume on, because 90% of my scrolling is done with volume off. But you just see some random looking tradie Aussie trying their best to sell you some product, and it's just so douchey and ineffective. You know, it just so seems so unprofessional. And I'm down with low production and authenticity, obviously. Look at my content, but you got to pull it off, you know. And so many times there's a guy standing at an awkward distance from the camera. It's like he's not all the way out and not all the way in at head and chest level. It's like you've got to be all the way in or all the way out. You can't be halfway. And it looks like he set the phone up on his bed or a table or something to record it. And you like quite often look like, you know, they're either some, you know, tradie looking dude or some, you know, footy player looking guy with his shirt off trying to sell you some gym apparel or something like that. And it's just, it's a no from me. I'm not buying anything from those people. It looks shit. It looks tacky. You've got to do better. Aussies advertising on Instagram, you got to do better, all right? That's just, I'm telling you now, it's constructive criticism. Take it, run with it, fix it, do better. Come on. Far out. What else, man? What else? I'm not sure how many people listening to this reading the blog. I'm enjoying doing the blog. Starting to get a little bit behind on the weekly episodes. I'm sort of running into about a week and a half at the moment because I had a few in the bank when I started. So I was just rereading and editing some old monologues I had and putting them up as blogs. So it was a bit of a cheat code. But I'm legit writing them week by week at this stage. So it's kind of dragged out a little bit. I posted the last one on, I don't know, if it was Monday. Maybe it might have been Monday. This week just gone, and it's now Sunday and I haven't finished the next blog, so that may blow out till Tuesday or Wednesday, but I'll just keep pumping them out as quick as I can for you anyway. It's the quality and the content has to still be there. End of the day, I am trying to juggle a few hats or a few balls at once at the moment with the podcast and the blog and the YouTube videos and obviously constant content on Instagram. There's a bunch of stuff going on there. So I am trying to keep on top of that. But this week, the blog was called The Road to the Journey. And I went into like the planning of this journey and its different stages and what I'm hoping to achieve during the year. And like I feel like a lot of people have thought about doing this, and I felt like it was valuable to outline what it was like for us and some of the decision-making processes were like. So, you know, anyone else considering doing it can kind of, you know, use that as a sounding board, something to bounce some of their own ideas off. So it kind of started with, originally planning this. It kind of starts just talking about what the first few weeks of the trip on the road have been like. It's been chaotic, and then I went into the fact that my whole life's been quite chaotic over the last 2 years, which was something that just let me know that I was making the right decision. Like, we needed to make a big change. We needed to try something different. We needed to get out of Headland. I needed to start following a dream, you know. And I am a dreamer. I've always been a dreamer. People call you a dreamer as if it's an insult, and understandably so, because so many things that people dream about, they dream about and then proceed to put absolutely zero effort into planning it or pulling it off. So those people are unrealistic dreamers. They're just dreamers. But And I think quite often the dreams are about escaping something, not creating something. So when I tell you I'm a dreamer, you got to know that I understand what the dream will take. And it's in fact a reason that I waited so long to launch myself into this dream, because I knew how much it was going to take and I knew that I wasn't ready to give it the attention it deserved, you know, at the time. So, you know, I've been planning and working on executing the first stage of this dream for several years now. The thing takes a while to pull off. Started small. I started by just uttering the dream out loud and, you know, letting some people know that, you know, once you say something out loud and people know, you know, that you've said it, they're either going to hold you to your word or they're going to judge you accordingly if you fail to make it happen. So there was like a research phase where I said, I want to travel the country in a van with the family. And then you start looking at, you know, the right car to do it in and the right caravan to do it in, how much money it's going to take to set that up, how much money you're going to need to spend along the way. And that was quite a... like, that was the... I had to have the most faith in myself during that stage, because it's like the dream's not real yet. It's no one's... no one believes you. Like, it's not that they don't believe you. No one really cares. You're just saying something that a lot of people say. You've done nothing towards achieving the dream. It's kind of just in your own head. You know, at this stage, not even my wife really believed. She wasn't really on board. She would say, yeah, that'd be cool. And we'd watch some, you know, traveling family videos on YouTube together and, you know, talk about it a little bit, and then it would be back to business as usual. But meanwhile, I'm planning the, you know, the vehicle and all that sort of stuff. And then we bought the vehicle and I'd planned the canopy and stuff in the background. And that was a big step, because now you're laying down money. But it could still just be a vehicle to do trips around the, you know, to do trips for a month here or there, and a nice big one, you know, once a year, and some overnight trips out from Henland. Just a lifestyle decision to buy a car and set it up for the outdoors when you're living in the outback of Australia. You know, so that was a good first step for me. I was like, I know where this is heading. I'm not spending this money and doing this for nothing. But you know, it's still very much disconnected and compartmentalized when like for my wife, the investment of the car and when other people, when you talk to them, it still doesn't kind of look like an inevitability at that point. But by the time we bought the caravan, put all the money into that, another trip down to Perth, you get that sorted and the battery system, everything set up for it. It's like people start knowing that you're serious at that time. But I still hadn't uttered these things out loud outside of my circle, you know. It's not the kind of thing you go and tell work that you're planning on doing a trip around Australia 2 years away from the fact, and then you're that guy for 2 years at work. You're like a leper, you know. So I'm planning it and getting things ready, and at the same time, just business as usual in my other life, my work life, and it had to be. I didn't want to be treated like a leper, and because I didn't want to be treated like a leper or like the guy that was leaving, I couldn't act like a guy that was leaving. I wouldn't do that for my own pride anyway, but it's just so then you're doubling down on the work efforts and trying to keep that rolling at full steam ahead, while on the side you're really planning an exit strategy off onto the over to the left here. So there was like living two lives for a period of time there. And you'd think that naturally you would just start getting more excited about the trip and that kind of part of your life would take over and your job would just sort of become something you just go and do and you know it's going to end soon, you'd be getting away from it. But it wasn't like that for me. It was getting more and more and more intense at work. Things were ramping up, more responsibilities, more growth. So I really had to keep really throwing myself into the job. And we had a bit of turmoil at home with things going on with my wife and her work, and she ended up, you know, on a workers' comp, you know, she was off on a workers' comp claim for whatever, 8 months due to a mental health injury from, you know, continued bullying and ostracization from her boss and a bunch of things. I'm not going to go into that story. It's a long story. It went on for 4 years to 4.5 years, really, of really poor behavior and management and you know, bullying and all that sort of shit before it sort of deteriorated into where it landed. So that was going on, and my wife spent time away from Port Hedland for, you know, for her own mental health reasons, getting some help, and there I'm parenting on my own and trying to juggle that and work and get the fucking car and the van sorted and plan the trip. And it was turmoil, man. It was turmoil, but I knew what I wanted to do. I knew this was something that was important to us. I guess, you know, there's the fear of like, what are we doing? We're going to give up a good job. We're going to spend all of our money. We've got young kids to think about. What about the future? Blah, blah, blah. But to me, that was all fucking noise, to be honest with you. So for people who are planning on doing this job, like, I think you need to make some decisions. You are going to set yourself back financially 100% by doing this. It's about experiences. It's about once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. It's about if this is something you want to do, you got to not be scared, because if this is something you want to do, you'll find 100 reasons not to do it, 1,000 reasons not to do it, only a handful of reasons to do it. But if you don't do it, I believe you'll kick yourself for the rest of your life. Even if you do it when you're old, it's not going to be the same when you're old. It's not something you're going to do as a family. Building these memories with our kids, showing them Australia, giving them a taste of, you know, being free, being a connected family unit, a little bit removed from you know, the social norms that have been created, you know, in you know, everyday life for people these days. So it was that important for us. So I knew that we were headed in the right direction. I just had to keep putting one foot in front of the other, keep putting money away, keep doing what we were doing, and we'd eventually get there. And I was also always very honest with myself about the fact that this was never going to be some sort of utopia where you got no problems. You know, I was chatting to one of the lads from back up in Headland yesterday and saying that I have as many problems now, day to day, as I had when I was working up at Pilbara's, in the Pilbara. You know, working a full-on job, problems all day long, every day. I've got just as many problems now, but they are problems that relate directly to the four of us, the five of us. We got the dog. There are problems between me and my wife, the problems with the kids, with schooling, there's problems with the van, with the car, problems with what can we do with the dog, problem with someone sick. It's normal everyday problems and stress, but they're my problems. They're our problems. Solving the problems directly benefits us as a unit, not somebody else. They're not someone else's problems that I've been tasked with fixing alongside of my own life's problems as well. So no, it's not some utopia where all your problems disappear when you quit your job and start traveling the country. It's full of problems, but they're good problems. They're my problems. They're our problems. And I was ready for that and aware of that. And that is, I think, something that if you are thinking of doing this, that's something that you certainly would want to be honest with yourself about and aware of. Don't run away from something. I'm doing this because I want to build something. And that leads me to the building something side of things. I said I'm a dreamer. I got dreams, man. I want this podcast to take off. I want to be able to support my family at some point in some facet by the content that I'm creating. That means podcasting, blogging, YouTubing, other things perhaps down the line, certainly those things as a base. And I believe that putting myself into this 100%, being honest and authentic and open and passionate and just all in and going places that people want to see and hear about and telling you our trials and tribulations along the way and giving you little snippets of videos of where we are and the Instagram stuff to keep you updated regularly and tying in the you know, some funny shit, some jokes and a bit of comedy and all that sort of stuff. I believe that that is valuable to people, and I just think that the more eyeballs that come, because they have been regularly coming over to the page lately, I'm hoping to see that start translating in more podcast listens as well. I believe that we get that up to a certain point, I can start monetizing this thing. I actually just got my first ever paid subscriber to my Substack blog this week. It was my sister. God bless her, my sister. I absolutely love her, mate. She's a fucking gem. Absolute gold heart, and you know, she always supports me in everything I do. But the road to pulling in a bit of money is there. Get enough views on the podcast. Start actually have started approaching advertisers for sponsorships. people can, if they enjoy what I'm doing here, they can pay for, they can pledge money to a Substack subscription if they enjoy that content. They can pledge money to our Patreon, which is you pay people go, they follow what you're doing, you put content on there, and they pledge money to your Patreon account to help support you along your journey because they enjoy the content that you're putting out and they find that it's valuable. You place your own value on it. That is a way that people can help support us. That's another way, another stream of revenue. YouTube videos. Once you get over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube and you get over a certain amount of views per video, you start getting paid by ad revenue automatically over on YouTube. So there's multiple streams of income that, that can be realized. And you know, it's a funny thing because so the only reason I care about the revenue is because I want to spend more time doing this. And to do that, I need to be able to support my family. So to be able to support my family, I need to make some money doing this. So, you know, I'm going to keep doing it anyway, but I want to try and monetize some of these forms of the content because I want to be able to continue to spend more time doing this. I don't want to go back to the standard 9-to-5 job. I'm not running away from carpentry. I still see myself doing carpentry, building. I've got my builder's ticket now in the future, but I see that more as a hand-in-hand with the content creation. I see it more as taking on projects that excite me, and I really see it as taking on projects for myself, buying a house, renovating it, selling it, doing that again and again and again. I could really get into doing that. It's going to take, you know, a bit to get back in the game because, you know, currently got no job spending the collateral that we had to put down on a deposit, but that's something that I'd like to get myself back in the position to do down the track. But certainly the content, launching the content, building this up, getting the viewers, the listeners, the subscribers, et cetera, over the next 12 months is the plan. And then look at incorporating the carpentry stuff back into it, you know, next year and moving forward. So, you know, I have a dream to live a different style of life than what I was told I had to live and than what I was brought up believing I had to live. And really incorporating a life where I have time freedom, you know, financial freedom, time freedom, location freedom, something I can do from anywhere in the country or even the world. I can, you know, that's something that's important to me to build and to show my kids that you can do that as well. So I do have big dreams. I'm willing to work my bloody ass off for it. And I just know that something that needs to work for me. I have to make this work because I know I won't be satisfied going back to a normal, you know, standard 9-to-5 job. And I'm not, believe me, I'm not shitting on anybody who does that. There's plenty of people who live happy, fulfilled lives with their, I'm saying 9-to-5, you guys know what I mean. A standard form of making money, whether you're a tradesman, whether you're an engineer or a doctor or, you know, you own your own business, you run a shop, whatever it is. Plenty of people who live in happy, successful lives doing that, you know, investing their money, building up their own little empire the way that they want to do it. That's awesome, mate. And everybody's different. I know for me, that's not the thing that's going to satisfy me. I need to have that time freedom to spend time with my family and to do the other things that I love outside of work. I need to have that location freedom to be able to do what I want, to be able to do what I love from wherever I want in the world, and obviously that financial freedom so that I'm, you know, can support the family and not have the debt collectors breathing down your fucking neck. That's obviously a massively important thing to take into consideration. So I don't know, man. That's kind of where I am at the moment. A lot of different things going on. You know, a lot of big dreams for the year. And even if it was only, you know, takes me the whole year to get the ball rolling, if I see the trends going in the right direction, I know that I can dedicate more time to this moving forward next year and just keep pushing towards the goal as well. But I certainly have big dreams, mate. I certainly have big dreams. I am a dreamer. I am a fucking dreamer. I'm not going to pretend I'm not anymore because I was not happy pretending to be a button-down, serious bloke who was just going to do things the way that I was told I was supposed to. I'm going to fucking make it happen my own way, and I'm sure a lot of people won't believe in me and will think that I'm crazy for thinking that way. Hats off to you. you do you and I do me. But if you do support me, then 100% thank you very much for the belief and for the support, for your time and for watching the content and for, you know, helping me get the word out and the message out and everything else you guys do who read, listen, watch my shit. I appreciate it, man. I really, really do. Really do. Look, that's probably it for this week. As an outro, I'm going to say, yeah, we haven't made our mind up on Albany yet. It's been good to be here for a week. We'll see how we go for the rest of the week. I am, if I'm being honest, more excited about South Australia than I am about Hopetown, Bremer Bay and Esperance. I'm just sort of done a lot of the beaches in WA at this point in time. But I'm still going to be open to the experience. We're not going to rush it. We're going to go through them, spend time at the spots we're supposed to go to, see what we get out of the experience. May end up loving it. But I'm kind of looking forward to getting to South Australia and checking out some new territory over there. So, yeah, that's it for the week, man. I will say again, look, if anyone wants to support me, there are ways you can do it. I have the subs, I have the Substack you can subscribe to. If you so felt so inclined, you can pledge money to me over at the Substack there if you enjoy that content. I have the Patreon. I'm going to need to start uploading the content back over to the Patreon because that's another form you know, that people can pledge and support you there as well. Even if you're just subscribing to my YouTube channel, mate, liking the Instagram page, subscribing to the podcast, all the free shit. That's fucking great. 100% do that. Just do that at a bare minimum. Let's get the numbers up. I'll keep doing my bit over here. Keep working my ass off and wait for the penny to drop. I'm going to go out with a Bob Marley song today. Yeah. Don't worry. Be happy. Every little thing's going to be all right. Because I watched the Bob Marley movie last night. And I got a bit of a thing about these movies on famous musicians, right? They're kind of hit and miss. The Elvis movie was dog shit. Like, they had these big names act, you know, and all this sort of stuff, and you know, it's really well produced and stuff. But, like, the guy had not a skerrick of charisma about him, and he's supposed to be Elvis. That doesn't work for me. The Whitney Houston movie was dog shit. She looked like Whitney Houston. You know, same thing, good production and everything. The songs were good, but the story was so all over the place. The Bohemian Rhapsody movie was good. They did a good job of that. But the Bob Marley movie, same thing. Good production. The music was great. The guy was very charismatic, good characters and stuff. But the storyline, it's like because they've got a story already, they don't obviously hire a good story writer to write this thing for them. They just kind of patch together the guy's life or the person's life, and it feels like they've patched together someone's life. So this, it's not a really nice, coherent story. It doesn't run smoothly. They miss a lot, which is sort of what the Bob Marley movie was like. But still, love Bob Marley. It was a great watch, great movie, you know, great music in it. The guy was, as I said, very charismatic, but certainly very patchwork, quilty, kind of the way it happened, where they put it together and rushed. They rushed the last part of the story as well. Here's what it is. We're not going to go out and play your track from Bob anyway, and we will see you again next week for an episode number 187. I'll be on the road. I'll be in like Bremer Bay or Hopetown or something by then. So I'll speak to them. Take it out. Average man over and out. Peace.
on.